So I was doing Mussar today with the third year guys who were there. The sketchy day. I'm not sure what else was going on today. So someone said we should speak about Sha'ifa and learning. So one guy said we do a Sha'ifa and learning, and the other guy said, what does that mean? So I'm going to let's explain the topic. Okay, Sha'ifa and learning. You know, a lot of us do what we do because that's what we do. There are very few of us who are like really thinking through exactly. Can you imagine what it would be like in Soviet Russia? A guy is, you know, goes through, he's 17 years old, and like Avraham Avinu, didn't see anything, grew up in a world of Avodah Zarah, or atheism, or communism, which is maybe the same thing. And at 17 years old, he wants the Mosa Nefesh against the Soviet edicts, and he's going to learn Torah in caves with a candle. Mosa Nefesh, they catch him, they're going to kill him. We have stories, a couple of people. What's that guy that comes here every few years? Yeah, Mendelovich. That guy's a walking inspiration. How many Mendelovichs are there walking around? I wouldn't want to be put in his situation. Who knows if I would be only that kind of Nisayan. Most of us are products, Baruch Hashem, of a yeshiva education. You know, I know everyone's life story, but probably most of us went to yeshiva, and you know where we ended up today. End up in yeshiva for most of us is probably more like a predictable, or that's what our parents were pushing us towards that. So we don't often think about the opportunity that we have. So Sha'ifa really means, Sha'ifa for learning, really means how to get ourselves to be riveted, to be directed, to be determined for learning. As if we would do it, as if it would count as if we were Mendelovich. We could turn ourselves into a Yosef Mendelovich. If you haven't ever heard him, it's really, really kedai. He's an amazing, amazing story. But, you know, it's trying to take some inspiration from what's out there and to use it to mobilize all the kochos that we have, so that we're not just doing it by rote. Oh, I'm here and learning because, I went to 6th grade, I went to 9th grade, I went to 11th grade, I went to 12th grade, I went to base manager. It's just like part of the routine. And I know that's not the story. I know in certain cases here it took tremendous mysterious nefesh to get here, but we have to realize that we are being most nefesh more than we realize. Someone just gave me a great mushel from Rav Huttner, which I said over one or two times since I saw it. But I only saw it a couple of days ago, so I couldn't have said it over that much. That you can't tell how strong a person's holding a sefer until you try and take it away from him. And then you see how hard he's holding on to it. So you can't tell. Everyone's got their Gemara open. But what are we really made of? And how determined are we? You're not going to know until someone tells you to close that Gemara, and you're going to say no. And what are we made of? And that's what a Nisayan is. A Nisayan is an opportunity for you to see what we are holding. We don't ask for the Nisayanas, because who knows how we're going to come out. But what kind of determination? If we would see Yosef Mendelovich, we would all be inspired. We would all be inspired. And if we would see a scene that has our faces on the Mendelovich, you know, biography, video of his life, we would be even more impressed. Wow, I could be like that person, but that person may be us. Okay, so I want to start with a joke. It's always good to start with a joke. So this fellow opens up a five-star kosher Chinese restaurant, and he goes all out. You know, the Chinese restaurants, you can have different stars, you know, one star, two star, three stars, five stars. Mamish the best, the ambiance, He imported the best chefs and the best equipment and the best decor, the lighting, remember just so. And the menus were done perfectly. You can imagine how fancy they were, in velvet and wooden things from China, that the place looked like you were in China. And imported waiters from China. And people walk, a couple walks in, they sit down, and they can't believe it. They never had anything like it. The ambiance was unbelievable. The food was unbelievable. The service was unbelievable. And what was even more amazing, that you had these amazing waiters, looked like they mamish were straight out of China, and they're speaking Yiddish. So they, before they left, they went over to the proprietor of the store, and they said, you know, we go to restaurants, and it's rare that we ask to speak to the proprietor, but I never was at a restaurant. We've been eating out all our lives. We've never had such an amazing experience. The place is beautiful, the menus are beautiful, service is amazing, the ambiance is amazing. And how do you get these Chinese waiters to speak Yiddish? The proprietor says, shh, not so loud. They think they're learning English. That's in the joke, just a laugh now. So a lot of the things that we learn are not done intentionally. They're done accidental. As when I talk about my days in yeshiva, I remember the yeshiva said, I didn't chap that I knew that even remembered half those things. I didn't realize the impact things were having on me until many years later. It's very important to know that. Like, if we're going to sit and analyze every couple of days, okay, did I grow now? Yeah? Let me see. What did I learn? It was pretty bad. Guys were going acting crazy by the cake break. Last night by La Maca was pretty bad. Shear today, I got basically, but what was the basically? It was nothing special. What was the big thing? And we don't give enough credit, not enough credence to what we're learning. We're like the Chinese waiters. They think they're learning English. We don't know what we're learning. We don't know. There's so much going on. I assure you, if you're in Yeshiva Gedola and you're learning 3 Siddurim a day and you're mostly keeping the Siddurim and learning, there's so much going on in the Rumo Shel Olam. There's so much transformation taking place that we don't realize it. We shouldn't fool ourselves into thinking that we're not getting it. Rabbi Grunblatt, I heard this many years ago from him. He said that Limanat Torah is compared to Shemen Zayis. It's compared to olive oil. What's the reason? Because olives, you pluck an olive off a tree, it is the most bitter of fruits. It's not tasty, an olive. It's even bitter. But olive oil, of all the oils, is the sweetest oil. And what we see from here is very similar to Torah. You take a young person and you open a Gemara and you show them the learning. Very often, when a person's young, you just show them the learning, so the Aramaic gets to him. He doesn't really understand Shat Vataria yet. And between it seems like it's redundant. And the language, everything together, it's dry. You don't get sipuk from learning. But the real sipuk is like the olive. That you take it off the tree, it's very bitter. And it's only after you totally decimate it, you thrash it, and you squeeze it, and you squeeze all of the juice out, that's where the sweetness lies. And very often what happens is, people who give up on the learning too early So they stay in learning while they were still tasting the bitter part of the olive. And just when they're getting to the center, to the squeezing out the juice, and they beat it to a pulp, that's where the sweetness comes out. But before they have a chance to taste that sweetness, they give up. So if we're at this level, we're in Beis Medrash, so we have an opportunity to mamish, to taste the sweetness, the Shemen Zayas. That's where all the nectar is. That's where all the sweetness is. And we have to keep pushing to get to it. There's an amazing Medrash, Medrash Rabbah in Parash Truma, which says that amazing mashal to a melech, a king, that had a bas yichida, had an only child, a daughter, princess. And entire life he cherished this daughter and took care of her and was very careful, you know, with her activities. And she was really treated like the pristine princess of the royal palace. And until it came time for her to get married. And a proper shidduch was proposed, a prince from another country who had his own lineage, and royal lineage, came to court her. And they decided to get engaged. It was time to get married. And after the wedding, it was a big, fancy affair. And the king says to his new son-in-law, he says, you know, this girl, this wife that you have now, she's my only daughter. To have you take her and to part from her, I can't. I cannot part from her. But to tell you that you can't take her, I can't do either. She's your wife. So I'm asking instead, what you do is wherever you go, please leave a place for me to come. I'll come to visit with my only daughter. The Medrash says, Kach Omar HaKadosh Baruch L'Klal Yisrael. The Torah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Torah is like the Bas Yechida. It's a Baruch Shalom's only child, so to speak. And there was a, you know, Klal Yisrael was mekabel on themselves, the Torah. So Mela, we married the Torah. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, those I heard Rabbi Mansour, he like alluded to this part also, that there was a whole fight between the Malachim and whether they should be able to, the Torah should stay in Shemayim or should go to Bnei Adam. And there's like a whole wrestling match, which Malachim finally conceded that it should go to Klal Yisrael on this earth. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, it's my bas yechida, to have part from her, I can't. But to tell you that you can't take her, I can't do either. You married her. So I ask, whatever you do, to leave a little makom to me to come visit. And that's the Beis Medrash. When we learn in the Beis Medrash, HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes to visit. And this is what gives a HaKadosh Baruch Hu like the simcha of a king visiting the Bas Yechida. So sometimes, just at the hair, what the impact of us learning, mamash puts a smile on HaKadosh Baruch Hu's face, that, you know, a person goes to learn, it has amazing impact. I want to say over that it says also very fascinating that, you know, it's very interesting that the Roman Catholics, when they have to appoint a pope, it's the coolest thing when a pope dies. They have this. So all the cardinals come to vote. If you're a cardinal, you get to vote, and otherwise you can't vote. It's like voting for like the you know, who's gonna be the MVP, sports writers. So like only cardinals vote. And they have like this certain, I assume everything came from Pius, so they have certain Kedusha, so people that vote, there's a hotel that's only used to stay in when you vote for a pope. So how often do you think this hotel is used? Okay, if a pope lives for 50, 60 years, so the hotel's not used for 50, 60 years. I heard by the last voting of the Pope that they were, cardinals were kvetching, they were complaining that, you know, because the previous Pope was there a long time, they're in this old hotel, two-star hotel at this point. It's the coolest thing, anyway. So, and they go vote. They vote for a Pope. And who knows how political, I don't know how they vote. The Kai Yisrael, throughout all the generations, had G'dolei Hadar, there were no votes. Nobody voted for the Chazon Ish. Nobody voted for the Brisker Rav. Nobody voted for Rav Aaron Cutler. Nobody voted for Moshe Feinstein. No one voted for Shmuel Kamenetsky. And there are others. I'm not picking one over the other. No one voted. They were just, well, how did it happen? Everyone. So the Medrash brings this down by Moshe Rabbeinu. You think it was just like everyone just, how did it come to be? You think there was a bas kol from Shemayim that he's the God of Ador? I don't know. I assume that. That's not what happened. It was the same way like we know today, the same way that this particular Gadol is the Gadol Ador, like when Moshe Feinstein was the Gadol Ador, the Chavetz Chaim, when he was living, was the Gadol Ador, so Reb Chaim Moser was the Gadol Ador, so there were certain people that people just knew he's the Gadol Ador. Why? Because he had Svarim. Think, oh, he had Svarim. You look at the shelves, there's a lot of Svarim. That's not the pshat. So what's the pshat? Famous, had a good market, so marketed them, had good people that market them, that have nice pictures of them putting money into the Kupa de Yir thing. Not established. So the Medrash says that what the reason why Klai Yisrael, it was Makabel Moshe as Moshe Rabbeinu, was because Moshe Rabbeinu, they sensed in him that he had a melus in Torah, that he's the one that sweated the most for Torah, for understanding Torah, and the Mela, he's the one to guide us because he knew Be'etzem more than anyone else what was the Mipi Hashem. He was the best able, the one who was most able to tell us what was the Ratzon Hashem, because he had that Amelus in Torah. And Klal Yisrael can sense when someone is Amel B'Torah, then he knows the Ratzon Hashem. Which is absolutely fascinating. You think about this Medrash, it's absolutely fascinating because Moshe Rabbeinu was the honor of Mikol Adam. You think, wow, he's really special. Can't imagine all the golden stories that were going on during his time and what an honor he was. And he was the Navi. HaKadosh Baruch Hu spoke to him, upon him, face to face. You could have said many reasons. Listen, HaKadosh Baruch Hu speaks to him, upon him. I'm sure they knew that. But that didn't convince them. That he was the person who was pacing in the Beis Medrash, who was learning, he was steiging, he was working on Tosfos, he was working on Pshat. That's what convinced Klal Yisrael that this person is the one who's Makabel. So I love this shmooze, because you think about it, that everyone's going to be in a position. You know, a person thinks, okay, I'm not going to be in Chinuch, I don't care. Someone has to know I'm not planning to be the Gadol Hadar. That's for whatever, Moshe Feinstein. I don't need to be the Gadol Hadar. I'm big Anav. I don't want to be the Gadol Hadar. You know, it's okay if I'm one of the Lamed Vav Tzadikim. Just I'll know. You know, that's not the case. A person's going to be involved in his life. He's going to have a family, his children, you know, the Bnei Beso, others. A person has to have impact and influence. That's what a person wants. The person thinks he doesn't need that, he's making a mistake. He's going to see later on in life that it is something important. Wherever a person goes, he needs that. So Klal Yisrael had Moshe Rabbeinu not put in the time, mamish, by the Seder, by going for the Seder, and mamish plugging it out and working on the shir and getting pshat and doing the Chazer Hashir and all those Chazer Hashmuz, all that, Moshe Rabbeinu, with everything he had going for him, the honor of Mikol Adam, and he spoke to Boshem, Panim al Panim, you would think that would be enough, that he should be able to lead Klal Yisrael. I assume the working papers he had, the marching orders he had from Moshe Shalom to go lead, that was going to happen, but Klal Yisrael wouldn't have listened had they not had that midah. So I think it's upon all of us to dehear that. Wow, that is such an important feature we have to learn. We want to be able to raise our own families. We want to have our children, you know, should respect us. What are they going to respect? They respect you more if you go to learn. I mean, we were all, if I could just break this back, we were all in high school recently. So you think about it, when you're in high school, and wherever you were, not everybody was here. You think about the Beis Medrash guys, you knew which Beis Medrash guy was real, that you would trust. If you had a question, Das Torah question, not going to ask your Rebbe, certain question, you're going to ask your Rebbe, it's pasnish, it's going to bother him. But there are certain things you would ask certain Beis Medrash guys and certain things you wouldn't. The Beis Medrash guy, if you want to ask a real question to the Beis Medrash guy, you would know which ones to ask, because the ones who are real, and you knew who was real. You didn't have to ask any Rebbe, you know, which Beis Medrash guys are, which ones aren't. You know on your own which ones are real, which ones aren't real. So, you know, I think that's the way I wanted to say it over. So we have to, now we're Beis Medrash guys, okay? So we're not doing it for the covet, but don't we owe it to ourselves to behave and to conduct ourselves like when we were in high school, we were looking at the Beis Medrash, okay, we had a lot of chashivas, we're in high school, we're a Beis Medrash guy. Once we get into Beis Medrash, we say, okay, not so chashiv, not so bad, I was all mistaken. No, it's not shot. It's still very chashiv. But we have to really conduct ourselves like the high school kids, when we were high school kids, how we viewed it. We have to view it that way. We have to put ourselves together that way. We have to learn that way.
Is there a way to do that not out of habit? Like everybody was saying in the beginning that people often do that just because they're used to learning.
I'm trying to crush the notion that we're just here out of habit. We're just doing it because we're doing it. It's all the Yetzirah trying to tell us, you're not real. You're not really real. You're just here. It's not real. You're not going to even get any credit for it because everyone does that. It's like a fashion. Like the same way you don't wear fat ties anymore. You know, I can't believe it. When does a person dehair? Like, okay, so some guys are into clothes. They know. I would not know. I would be the later end. When I was 19, I would have known more. But, and even then, I wasn't like the first one in. There are certain people just get, they know when the tie is changed. Okay, but now you say with a fat tie, you say I wear a fat tie. You know, I wear fat ties. And certain people know when your shoe is supposed to have a buckle and when it's supposed to have a shoelace. So the same thing. I didn't base matters. If you think you're just only Yetzirah, if the Yetzirah tells you you're doing it, you're just doing it, that's what everyone does. It takes away from the chashivas for yourself of what you're doing. I'm trying to say that, you know, if you're learning, you're learning. You have to give yourself the credit and work at the level, with the work ethic of someone who's doing it lishma, like you're setting it up right, you're not doing it out of habit.
It's impossible to really do it out of habit.
It's possible to do it out of habit.
It's not what's happening.
It's possible. People just go through motions, and some people are just like they go through the motions, but not doing with determination. So if they stop and think, like, "Wow, I couldn't even do this much unless I was really determined," like no one's pressing them to take the safer away. We don't have the Nisayim, but if Hashem would test us on taking the safer way, Rashiva used to say over that, I was marveled at this, that his father once said he was walking in Slobodka and a Russian officer took a shot at him and missed. And he lamented that he had the opportunity to die al pi kiddush Hashem. At that moment, that would have been such a zchus to be able to die al pi kiddush Hashem. I said, what? He was going to die? that would have been the end of the whole system. You know, we want to die. Come on, is that, that's. I never. Was that real? Was that not real? Was that a real story? Or was that just one of these things? That's great myths. I wish, you know, now that he didn't die, he wishes he died, but he didn't die. You know, but we don't tell. And the Rashi used to say that many of us, like you hear all these hero stories of the Holocaust. You know, you hear all these hero stories. Say, wow, how did these people do it? But that's because they were put up to the test. The Meshiva used to say that all of us, many of us, would pass that test, but we're not put in that makom. So our true natures don't have a chance to shine if we would be tested, and then we would be only b'nisayah, and we would realize where we're holding. We're in a higher madriga than we deher, that we realize. Reshiva used to say that one pilpul shir, person come a lamdin with one pilpul shir. He said that often. One pilpul shir. It was a very big motivation because, okay, become a lamdin level A on this pilpul shir. Okay, let's say you worked on a pilpul shir. Wow. But now you can become a lamdin, a next pilpul shir. A person could reach a madrega through one shir. He said that very often. Person could reach such a madrega. I'll tell you a maisa. I wrote it up. I wrote up this following story, and I wrote it up in detail. And I sent it in to there's a certain chat, Chofetz Chaim Chevra chat, that my chavra in San Diego, Rabbi Letterman, you know, organizes, and. And every so often I get inspired to write. I don't have patience. I read it, you know, here and there. All these, you know, some of them are like ridiculous hacks over, you know, did the Rashi use his right hand or his left hand when he blew his nose? You know, most of them I just like, I can't handle this. But every so often there's something interesting. And this one I wrote up, and I had in mind when I wrote it up that one day they're going to write a biography about the Rashi. And they're going to realize that there is this Chofetz Chaim Chevra chat. And they're going to probably read through it, and they'll take some of the stories. So I'm not going to go write. I don't know who's working on it. I wrote over this story that should get printed. And v'kach ava, somebody was working on a biography of the Rosh Yeshiva and one of the Talmidim. And, you know, I'm pretty sure it was very restricted. I'm sure Gemara Harris are, you know, over that and which stories get in and only stories that are mukrach and nothing that makes the Rashiva into a malach. You know, they don't care for that, do the usual things. So, and they sent me the story that was from the Chofetz Chaim Chevra that we found this story in your name. Is it accurate? The only Chofetz Chaim would they do such a thing, you know, to write a story. If it's a fascinating story, which I'm about to tell you. You know, is this true? It happened. I went through it, and they, you know, they sent it to me. It was edited. They cut out this. They cut out this. I don't remember what. And they sent the whole manuscript to art school. It got rejected because they took out all the good stuff. I think, you know, all the stories that are not true is what makes the book good. You know, that's what I suspect. But they're still working on it. You know, to get the biography. But this is the story. This is how it happened. It happened to me. So I want to tell you all this maisa. It's a tremendous chizuk to me personally, and I think it should be a chizuk to you also. It's really on this vart that a person come a lamdan with one pilpul shir, which gives us chizuk, because on any one seder, if a person plows through, a person can plow through a seder and reach a level that he didn't have at the beginning of the seder, and he pushed through it, and he worked on himself. You're reaching a madriga today, not something a madriga you can reach tomorrow. You reached a madriga today. You could do it today. And tonight, by tomorrow, tonight's night seder, or tomorrow morning, I'm going to reach a different madriga. Every seder that we learn, we're going to reach another madriga. How many storm will we have? We'll be in yeshiva 1 year, 2 year, 3 year, 4 year, 10 years, 15 years. Okay, we'll be in yeshiva 15 years. But right after that. So a person has to work on himself to get into the mode of growing, like, you know, a person's working out. So he starts with 5 pounds, and he goes 10 pounds, and he goes 15 pounds, and that's 20 pounds. He's in a mode that he wants to go further. And after he he reaches a level. Is there a level that you just don't add anymore? Anybody know about weightlifting? I guess at some point you just don't add more. But then you work on something else, work on a different muscle. He's not lifting weights. You do other things with this way, that way, I don't know. You do all the different directions. So a person who every Seder, he gets into the mode that he's going to the next level, that becomes very contagious. So he wants to work, he gets into that system in himself. If he's not exercising, then he feels like he's missing something. So it's good for us to practice when we're young. We're all considered young over here, that we could still get to the next darga. So let me tell you this ma'aser. So I was the Rosh Yeshiva secretary, Gabbai, and Rosh Yeshiva had a flight. I believe he had like a 3 o'clock flight and at JFK, and he had to leave for the airport by 1:30, 1:40, and shiur was usually from 12 to 1:15, like it is over here. But, 12 to 1:15, Rosh Yeshiva still had to pack, had to eat. Rosh Yeshiva did not move fast. It just didn't go from place to place fast. It took a long time. I have to digress from the story just to highlight that prat that it took Rosh Yeshiva a long time. It took Rosh Yeshiva a long time to do everything. So I don't think that's where the derech came from. When I went to Menachem Mobile, Mrs. Tendler from Baltimore, my sister-in-law's mother, so the Rabbi, which Rabbi Tendler? No, Tendler? I forgot his first name, Tendler. So he used to have a yeshiva in Seagate. So he told me over when I went there, he told me over this mice about the yeshiva. The yeshiva used to vacation sometimes in Seagate, which is like deep into Coney Island. Okay, and it's like a gated area, and Rosh Yeshiva had to get away sometimes. Nobody knew he was there. And he used to daven in a shul. Nobody knew who he was. And he met this Rabbi Tendler who had a yeshiva. And he saw the Rosh Yeshiva once, and he says, I have a yeshiva. Rosh Yeshiva got excited, you have a yeshiva? So it's fantastic. He told him to come to the yeshiva. And okay, one Sunday morning he was davening in a shtibel there, and there was like one of these minion factories, and Rabbi Tendler was going, and he saw this elderly woman outside. So Rebbetzin Leibowitz, Alei Hashalom, the first Rebbetzin, says to him, "Can you please go inside and just let me know if the Rosh Yeshiva is okay?" And he didn't know who the Rosh Yeshiva was. He didn't know anything. But he said, okay, this woman's asking if the Rosh Yeshiva is okay. So he went in, and he saw the Rosh Yeshiva. His tefillin had unwrapped on his shalyad. So he took off his jacket, and he took off his all over the sleeve, and he had put it on. Then he had to put off his sleeve, he put on the jacket, he put on his talis, and he was davening. The Rosh Yeshiva went there for chakras. I think he went for chakras at 7 o'clock, and he didn't finish chakras till like 9:30. He went through three different minyanim of chakras, three or four different minyanim of chakras till he finished. So the Rosh Yeshiva took him a long time. There was no gabbai with him. It was just the Rebbetzin. So anyway, so there's this maisa so the Rosh Yeshiva had to go to the airport, and he had to eat lunch, and he decided he's going to get early shiur that day. So he came for shiur, I think it was about quarter to 11. So it was a new shiur from a quarter to 11, quarter to 12. Get him home, and get him back to the house at 12 o'clock. I'll eat lunch till 12:30, quarter to 1. We don't have to leave till 1:30. There's enough time to take care of everything. It's perfect. And he came, I got Rosh Yeshiva there on time, 10:45. He was giving shiur, and around a quarter to 12, 10 to 12, got to take him home. Got to get him home by 12 o'clock. If he's home by 12 o'clock, it's all going to work out. So around a quarter to 12, 10 to 12, I walked to the front of the shiur. This was the job of the secretary. And I told the Rosh Yeshiva then we should start going. And the Rosh Yeshiva was middle of a shakalataria back and forth with one of the guys. And the Rosh Yeshiva, like, He didn't even look at me. It's just like, he just looked through me. He heard me, and I guess I just sat there. I just stayed in the back, standing like next to him. And he's going back and forth, taking another 5 minutes. He said, you know, Yeshiva, we should really go. I'm not trying to shoot the guys. Yeshiva has to go. They knew he had to go because it was early Shir. And Yeshiva kept going back and forth with this guy. It was now like 5 to 12. And I wait for a pause in the conversation. I wait till the Yeshiva finishes talking. When the guy starts talking, I get up. Said, okay, the Rashiva has to go now, let's go to the airport. I stand up, like Rashiva's gonna follow me. And Rashiva didn't budge. Going back and forth, this guy's arguing through me, like they went like this, they went like this, and back and forth, back and forth. And it's now 5 after 12. To this Rashiva and this one guy. Back and forth, Kash and Teretz. Rashiva says again, Kash and Teretz. I'm ready to punch this guy. And the guy doesn't let up, and the Rashiva wasn't engorging me at this point. Then someone comes in from the office and says, you have a phone call in the office. Phone call in the office? Well, I don't work in the Yeshiva. But only one person could be calling. The Rebbezin. The Rebbezin's calling. I'm not doing my job. She was a tough boss. It's for sure the Rebbezin. So I go to the office. I say, hello? The Yeshiva has to be home. What's going on? What's going on in the Yeshiva? I said, Rebbetzin, she didn't want to hear. The Yeshiva needs to be home. Okay, she wasn't waiting to hear my terrors. She, do your job. So went back in the thing, and whispered to Yeshiva, Rabbi, the Rebbetzin says that the Yeshiva has to come home. And he goes, back and forth, back and forth, kasha teretz, like this. Mamish not gorges me. So I didn't know that. I came up with a chat. I'm going to go get the Rashiva's coat and his hat. And none of you know the old building in Forest Hills, but the Rashiva gave shir in the auditorium, where the Ginsburg Shul, which was a upstairs of the building, and there was an exit from that room to the street. I didn't have to take the Rashiva to his office and put on his coat in the office, then go down the steps. I'll sneak out the back way. So I go get the Rashiva's coat, and it's a little bit unorthodox. I put the Rashiva's coat on, and I get him to stand up. Everyone stand up, stand up, stand up. I got the Rashiva to put his coat on. I put his coat in, and then I'm being aggressive. And we have to go. Walk with the Rashiva. Okay, that they did. Back and forth, like this, back and forth. It's 12:20, 12:30, it's 12:40. We're still going, it's 12:45. I run while everyone's standing there. I go get my car from down the block. I drive the wrong way onto Kessel Street. I drive onto the sidewalk. I'm being really dramatic. I run out of the car, leave the door open, lights on, windshield wipers going, and I go to get the Rashiva, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. There's the Rashiva's walking. I walk to the car. Back and forth, back and forth, kasha teres. Same guy, the entire time. It's almost 1 o'clock, 10 to 1, 5 to 1, 1 o'clock. Finally, the Rashiva says, I have to go. He gets into the car. I'm exasperated. I run around. First thing I do is I lock the doors. I close the door, lock the doors. They're all standing around the car. And Rashiva says to me, Mordechai, you hear? He heard it. And the end, he heard it. I said, he heard what? The guy didn't hear a thing. What did he hear? He was still yelling, but he wasn't yelling as loud. He heard it. And the Rashiva felt that once a guy gets in that deep, if you can show him which svara is a little off, and show him that it's not like this, but it's like this, you mamish change him for life. He mamish held that he couldn't miss that flight, but he was ready to give up everything. I'm not trying to say praise the Rashiva. I'm only trying to bring out this midah. When we get in that deep, we could mamish change our lives. I saw it firsthand. The Rashiva said, you know, he heard when he heard him yelling that it was a little bit different, he heard the svara. When the book gets printed, you're going to hear that story. Okay, I'm just going to close with one ma'isa. I've said this one before. I was going to save it for when I was, if I'd ever be asked to speak as the keynote speaker by the next Siyum HaShas. But for this, it was your topic. So I felt that it went. I don't usually prepare a topic that the guy is asked, but I felt if someone's asking for this topic, this story, you know, mamash changed me, and I first heard it a year ago, and mamash changed myself in the last year. I want to say over this ma'isa. This ma'isa is mamash amazing. So I was giving shir after Rabbi Sharfman was nifter, and originally Rabbi Kier was going to give two shirim, and one of the guys, I don't want to say who it is, but he's sitting in this room, and he comes to me and says, Rebbe, our Rebbe was nifter, we don't even get our own Rebbe. That's what he said. It wasn't meant as a slight to Rabbi Kier, but they just felt like they're not getting their own Rebbe. That was so painful. It was such a hard time for our yeshiva, and we're not past it yet, but you know, it was very hard. So I said, you know, I'm gonna give shir, okay? And I don't remember what I was doing that year. Every year my job changes, so I said, you know, I'm gonna give shir. So I was giving shir, and we were doing this this sugya, and that Shabbos, I don't know what happened. I picked up this chapter in some Judaic biography. They were like 15 pages about Reb Moshe. So I was reading. And this Nachman Seltzer's writing that when he learned in Staten Island, no, it wasn't Nachman Seltzer. It was someone else. It was I forgot his name. It wasn't that. Nachman Seltzer's writing it. And this fellow was learning in Staten Island, and he was like 14, 15 years old, and he made a siyum on a masechta on the second day Shavuos. And Reb Moshe was in Staten Island for Yontif, and MTJ and the people who learned there didn't get to know Reb Moshe in the later years in Staten Island. They had an apartment for him in the yeshiva, so be able to see the Reb Moshe in a different light. A lighter mood. And so he's talking to Reb Moshe, and he was like a little bit smug, a little bit gaivadik that he made to see him on this masechta. And Reb Moshe was trying to like sort of put him in his place, and he told him that, you know, when I was he made a see him on like tainus, or I'm not making light of it, moikatan, I'm not making light of the making a see him on the masechta. Reb Moshe just like threw it out there, like when I was 13 years old, I made a siyum on Baba Kama, Baba Matsya, Baba Basra. You know, and he was trying to tell him, like, you know, there's more to do. And he started talking about his life, and he said, when I was 18 years old, he was from the town of Lubin, probably that's where Lubin comes from. But and he was drafted into the Russian army, and by 18 years old he was already at 13 years old he made a siyum on Baba Kama, Matsya, Basra. You can imagine what he did by 18 years old. So he already was a very chashuv Talmid Chacham Ben Torah, and he realized in the Russian army you joined the Tsarist Russia. And it was a life sentence. It was 25 years before you can get out. So 25 years, so being in his 40s, and having, you can't learn, you can barely eat, you can't eat kosher, you can't do anything for 25 years, he realized his life would be over. It wouldn't be the life that he hoped it. That would be the end. He can't start at 50 years old. So he was petrified. And he heard about the Chabad Chaim, and I figured out that the Chofetz Chaim at the time was, this I did my own computations, must have been in his late 60s. Like, he was already an old man, the Chofetz Chaim, 70 years old in 1900, was already considered old. He went to the Chofetz Chaim and he told them that he wanted a bracha to somehow deal with this draft notice, and you couldn't escape, not you can't run anywhere, there they catch you. You know, so he asked for a bracha. So the Chofetz Chaim said like this to him, Kol hamakabel al atzmo ol Torah, ma'avir mimenu ol malchus. Whoever accepts upon himself the yoke of Torah will be removed from him the yoke of government. So that's all he told him. And that was it. The appointment was over. Next. Before he got up out of the room, Moshe said to himself, okay, the Kama Palms of Old Torah is going to go back to learn. But it hit him like a cold shudder went through his body, that his life is hanging in the wings right now. What will his life be like? He came for a bracha. He was drafted. Al pi derech hateva, he is going to be now in the army for 25 years. He can't be frivolous about this. Like, what did Chofetz Chaim just tell me? So whoever is makabel on himself, old Torah, but he was already learning. He made a siyum on Bava Kama Mesiyah Babasra when he was 13. He probably made many other siyum since then. What is that going to mean to him? He's makabel on himself, old Torah. He was makabel on himself, old Torah. So right there, Moshe writes it, and I have it in my house. You come read it, you won't believe it. He was makabel on himself at that moment, sitting by the Chofetz Chaim, with his life on the line, that right now, I'm makabel on myself to whatever learning I do, I will ratchet up 100 times. Whatever I'm learning, I'm going to learn with 100 times more intensity than I have until now. And that was the Kabbalah he took upon himself at that moment, at that time, before he left the presence of the Chofetz Chaim. He took upon himself, he's going to ratchet up 100 times. And he got up and walked out. He made the trip back to Lublin, Russia. He says, by the time he got back, they were taking down the signs, the draft had been rescinded. He's certain, Moshe writes, he's certain that the draft was rescinded just from the Kabbalah. Just from, he didn't even exercise it yet. Just from the Kabbalah upon himself, the draft was lifted and was removed. He says, Moshe, that everything he became happened because of that moment. And you hear stories about Rav Moshe, it was the intensity of his learning. So which means that had he not gone for this bracha, Rav Moshe would have been a very fine Rav. There were many fine Talmidei Chachamim who were no-named. Maybe he would have written a sefer somewhere, but he wouldn't have become Rav Moshe Feinstein. So I had just seen this. And that particular Shabbos, I had my two nephews, present company excluded, had my two nephews with me from Baltimore. They were little kids. Well, one was, I don't know, 13, one was 9. And we had to take them back to the airport when they were going back to Baltimore. And my wife and I took them. And, okay, they were traveling by themselves. But my wife, you know, said she wanted to get a pass and take them to the gate and wait with them till they get on the plane. It's, you know, that's what you do for your little nephews. So I said, okay, you know, I was going to take it to the airport. So I said, how long will the whole thing take? So, you know, you want to be there an hour before, so till they get on the plane. So how long is it on the plane? They board a half hour before. We'll get there an hour before, and she'll wait with them to get on the plane. So it's probably about 40 minutes. Might be about 40 minutes till I get back out. I said, okay, it's going to be a long one. So you know, I took with me, I was preparing for Shir, I took this, the Kovei Tzaaris, we were learning, right? This was 2 years ago, so it was Yavamba, so it was Kovei Tzaaris, it makes sense. And I had this Kovei Tzaaris copy in my pocket, because I knew I had this 40 minutes, so I was going to learn this Kovei Tzaaris. And as soon as my wife got out of the car with my nephews, I look up, where am I going to wait? What am I going to do? How are we going to find each other? You know, you can't wait here by the gate. 40 minutes. So I asked my wife, how are we going to find each other? She says, okay, well, we'll figure it out. So she goes inside, and I see the guy in front of me with the blue lights, flashlight, bullhorn. You know the scene. And I didn't even know where to go. I should go parking, go into the parking lot. There's a cell phone waiting area. I never did that before in my life. I'm not that obedient. And what am I going to do? So, you know, I just remember, I just read this Maisa. Kol HaMekabel Olav Ol Torah, Ma'avir Menor Ol Malchus. This is Malchus. You know, let's give it a shot. So I whip it out of my pocket, this Kovei Tzaaris. Okay, I took upon myself, I am going to learn this Kovei Tzaaris, and I'm going to ratchet up the learning 100 times than I ever learned before. And let's see what happens. I took out, it's a Maisa Shoya, and I opened this Kovei Tzaaris, and with full concentration, I delved into this Kovei Tzaaris. And I'm telling you, no one touched me, no one bothered me. The next person who I heard from was my wife. 40 minutes later, she banged on the window of the car. Says, "How'd you know when to come?" I said, "I never left. I never left." "What are you talking about? You never left?" And these guys are blowing whistles. They were blowing whistles. I'm telling you, I don't know what they probably thought I was some crazy person. I don't know what it was. No one bothered me for 40 minutes. And this was relatively, it was less than a year after they had that whole shooting at Fort Lauderdale Airport. It was Shiloh al Pidera Chateva. I stayed there, I am not exaggerating, for 40 minutes by departures. I sat there right by the opening of the gate with the Broward Sheriff cars, one in front of me, one behind me, the entire time, with the blue lights, and there were sheriffs walking around. You should try it. I didn't do a tour to test it. But you have to try it. You can't do it every minute. I don't mean I could do it every minute. Okay? But a person try it. Take the test. Take the Pepsi challenge. Take it. And call him a Kabbalah. All Malchus, Ma'avir Menu, I'm sorry, Kol Megalav, all Torah, Ma'avir Menu, all Malchus. They were removing all of the headaches that we put upon ourselves all these pressures that we have to do something, have outside pressures, whether it's going to be, Parnassa or other stresses, what's going to happen with this, with that. Yeah, you have troubles? I have a great Mahalach for you. Try it. Try ratcheting it up 100 times. 100 times, a lot of times. Who knows? When we look up at the end of all this, we may be Moshe Feinstein. Because at that level, people are going to see the Amelus. They're going to see, wow, this is somebody who I trust. He knows the Ratzon Hashem. This is the person who is, wow, you become a Lamdan. Do that every Seder. You try that every Seder for a whole day. And you see if you can push it to 2 days. Over 3 days, you push yourself. That's amazing. This is the make that Kadosh Baruch Hu be so happy with you. He's able to learn his Torah. Whatever Torah you learn, when you learn it, that is the Torah that becomes prevalent in the world. So you make the Ribbono Shel Olam smile. Because otherwise, it's just on the shelf. If we don't learn the Torah, it's like taking, you have beautiful Sfarim in your house, and it's just like, sits on the shelf. What good is it? There was a guy in yeshiva, he wasn't one of my chaverim. Not that I'll be, right, he was much older than me, but he was more of a mechutzav than I am. And when he went on a shidduch, the father of the girl was starting up with him, and he's no one to start up with. And he was very good, but also very, what's the word I want to say? He could be arrogant if you stick your hand in too far into the cage. And his father didn't know that. So he went and he started fehering him. But he wasn't hearing him, can we talk and learning. Sometimes, you know, Rabbi Rausch, they say when he went out with, you know, with Krumglass's, the Zichrono Lebracha's daughter, so he had a feher. Of course he had a feher. That was Rausch and Walgi, you know, he had a feher. We all knew about that, her feher. He was older than me also. But this person, he was going out and he was a balabas. He, you know, wasn't in learning. And he started fehering this, oh, what are you learning? Oh, the fes, oh, you know, he was, so to speak, trying to, you know, push him around. And this fellow was very good, was not someone he could be pushed around by this lightweight. So the guy got a little upset. You know, he was a little upset. Obviously, the shidduch didn't work out, as you'll see in a second. And he said, yeah, I'll show you. I'll show you in the Gemara that the pshat I'm telling you is right. He took the Gemara off the shelf, the Chavetz Chaim potential bacher. He took the Sof shelf, and then he went like this. That's what it is, nose. And then he couldn't even learn. You know, so he messed up the wrong guy. So that we have to realize that we, you know, this is everything that we are learning. We'll see that we're really working on it. We're steiging. People will respect us. We'll have influence on our own lives and our own families. You know, what would have been without the Moshe Rabbeinus or Moshe Feinstein? It was their amelus that triggered their whole lives, their whole mahus. Klai Yisrael made it because of that. And for anyone who's having any kind of, you know, challenges, as learning brings on, the most challenges in life comes from learning. The most challenges, you walk into a Beis Medrash, this is, I heard this from many people, is the biggest nisayon to go into a Beis Medrash to learn. You walk in there, you see all the svarim. A good Beis Medrash, all the svarim lined up in the back, the Tzos, the Rambam, and the Shulchan Aruch, and the Shas and Shuvas, and the Nevi'im, and the Musa svarim, and then you hear people quoting all of them. You don't know where they are, what's this, what's that. When I was younger, I didn't know anything, and you know, you come in, and everything seems like one big daze, and you think like, oh, Mashiach, this is not for me. It's somehow other people are doing it when they were born. Someone just like injected the information into their head. And you think that you'll never be able to be kona it. It's not true. It's all Maisa Sutton. It's all Maisa Sutton. All of that is in an hour. All of that can be figured out. Someone just, you know, align everything and teach you who's who. You know, the high school boys when they're younger, they don't know the difference between a Ketzos HaChoshen and a Torah Teasers newsletter. they don't know the difference. They're all the same. Everyone's the same. They don't know Mishnah Berurah. It was Mishnah Berurah. What came first, the Rambam or the Mishnah Berurah? You know, and like people want to say they make a tainus because they didn't shlok kaparos. So do I have to fast another fast day? If I didn't, they don't know anything. Nhagim, they don't know the difference between a minig and a issa deraisa. They don't know we don't know anything. When we're young, we don't know anything. But don't get nervous or anything. No one knows anything. No one knows anything when they're born. It's zero. And where are you supposed to know it from? You think there's some injection? Your fourth grade rabbi taught you everything. Your fourth grade rabbi taught you Chumash. Your fifth grade taught you Chumash. The sixth grade taught you Chumash and Navi. The seventh grade, so you learned a little Gemara. You learned five blot in sixth grade, and maybe if you're lucky, you learned seven blot in seventh grade. Like the joke at the RSA convention in June, so they decided they're going to sell the aliyahs by the RSA convention. Imagine RSA convention, they're selling aliyahs. The old machan from there. The only Chavetz Chaim could they have a fundraiser like that. So the MC was a clown, you know, was a kibitzer. So he said, okay, I have a way to sell the aliyahs. We're going to use blot. Okay. So the first guy says, okay, I'll commit 50 blot. I'll learn 50 blot over the year. The next guy says, okay, I'll do better. I'll do 40 blot. This guy says, I'll do 30 blot. Okay, this guy do one blot. Ah, he gets the aliyah. So, you know, we have such an opportunity. Now, I would just like to close with one opportunity. No one knows anything. Don't get nervous what you don't know. You'll know it. I assure you that you'll know. But we have to ratchet up. Ratchet up. We could do it. Don't look at that person who's, oh, he's such a good masmid. Like he must have drank some potion and he's a big masmid. Some people can learn and sit there for 4 hours. Okay, good for them. They're blessed with that, but they're not blessed with other things that other people may have. They have other midos, tovos, and other talents, and other skills. Gevaldik. Everyone has to use their skills and figure it out. That's the sign of life. Don't get nervous. Everyone, you look over your shoulder, you get nervous. You could look around and you find, if there are 40 guys in the Beis Medrash, so each guy has 39 reasons to throw in the towel. Because everyone looks at someone else and says, if I would be like him, it would be gevaldik. You know, some people say, if I would be Rav Moshe Feinstein, I'd also be an anav. If I knew Kol HaTorah Kula, I'd also be an anav. Yeah, try no Kol HaTorah and be an anav. If I would be this person, I'd be an anav. Okay? It's not true. If I would have a lot of money, I would give tzedakah. It doesn't work that way. You know, everyone thinks that the Nisayan is only theirs and someone else has it easy. It's not true. So we all could do it. We could all become the Rav Moshe Feinsteins. You know, Rabbi Kier gave he quoted such a gevaldik tosfos that it's considered al pi derech hateva. Anyone who is in yeshiva is mikam an adam gadol. It's al pi derech hateva. It's like pashut. And anyone in yeshiva, it's certainly true in this particular audience. Anyone who's in yeshiva, it's pashut. You can become an adam gadol being yeshiva, but you got to stick it out. And you got to. That's the Tosfos, and I thought it was in Ksupas, I don't remember, Sama Kimmel, but then I looked and Sama Kimmel wasn't there. The beginning of the year, in the Soda Machine Room on Shabbos, Rakir quoted this, Mar Malcolm, Rabbi Akiva, and the whole, you can't make a neder on Davarish of Asid. Anybody remember what that Mar Malcolm is? Okay, you'll take it out. You take a look at it again, Mechazik, every person becoming Adam Gadol. So we just can't give up. Remember, Rabbi Grimblatt said, the Shemin Zayas, We're mamish at that point, it's not seventh grade anymore. We got past that hard part. Okay, we're not just trying to figure out what hachi means and hacha means and hasa means and why don't they just write in English and why don't they put the kudus in the Gemara. I still don't know the answer to that question. And you know, it's just talk straight. But, you know, now that we're past, the language is not the biggest deal. It's still hard, but we see that there's more, we see at least the challenge in the Shakwa Tai, what was the Havavah? We see that this could be superficial learning. You could learn a Gemara, and then you see Tosis, but it turns around the whole Gemara. You learned it all wrong. And when Marsha says, it figures it out. Once you could see that, you could see the depth of Torah. Now you could work on something. Now you could learn. So let's stay with it. But okay, and also a lot of things that we learn, we don't know. We don't even know what you're learning. We don't know what we're going to come out with. I did not, when I was in Yeshiva, I did not chop all the lessons, all the impact that it had on me. Even when I was in high school, who has any impact from high school? High school, you just what could be? And I learned when I was in high school. And I found all my Mishnah Berurahs, all my parasha. I just found the other day my wife found and put it for me to figure out what to do with it. All the Divrei Torah I wrote up every Friday from what the Rebbe said. Starting with Tazria, I don't know what happened before Tazria, but from Tazria and on, okay, wow, such beautiful notes, Gevaldik. Hey, high school, what occurs to know in high school? You know, so which Rebbe do you think injected everything else? I don't know. No Rebbe injects anything else. It takes a long time. It takes time to learn Kol HaTorah Kula, and for us, Kol HaTorah Kula may not be what it means for Rebbe Chaim Kanievsky. You know, everything with Safra, and you know, he makes us see him every year and call it Torah Kula. We have a different derech. You know, it's very, very doable. We have to ratchet up. We have to do it. I just want to bring up one last point that, you know, every year the yeshiva takes on a different personality. There are no 2 years in yeshiva are alike. I've been here, you know, many years. No 2 years are alike. I'm Amish. The people don't know me. I'm Amish. Have a different job every year. 4 years ago, I was mamish, I was in the elementary school. I didn't get into the building. And I was in the elementary school. I used to come back here at 4:35 o'clock. So when I came, I couldn't stay longer. At 4:35 o'clock, I just wanted to do something. I wanted to learn something. So I came to the base mash. I got close with Yax and Dovin Rummelstein and a couple of the guys. I used to learn with them in the afternoon because they were having trouble with Bikias. And I used to learn with them. They got all excited. And the next year, I decided I'm going to be in the base manager that year. I had no shayachus to the base manager. Before that year, I had shayachus. I gave shmuzim since Rabbi Chait left. I started giving shmuzim. I had more shayachus with the base manager. But my whole life changed then. Just from learning, and just from learning like 45 minutes a day in the base manager, I got into the base manager. And I'm still not so much in the base manager. I got, charged this year to help work in the high school. Okay, every year is a different year, but I'm only saying from my perspective. But for those people that are here, every year is a different year. Every year is, it's not just like, I'll be in the base manager 2 years or 3 years. Every year has its own story. So this year we are blessed. Baruch Hashem, we have four branches just arrived. And I would like to just put it, without making anyone feel uncomfortable. It's a tremendous thing to have chizuk HaTorah. When we have, if any one person comes to yeshiva, has the opportunity to add more chizuk HaTorah in the Beis Medrash. Every little bit makes such a difference. The truth is, each one of us could be a brancher. You want to be a brancher? You can be a brancher. Baruch Hashem, they have a system. You can go out. I grew so much when I was in yeshiva, when I branched. In those days there weren't too many branches to go to, and I was in Queens. They had I was in Eretz Yisrael for my first year, Eretz Kinneret, and second year I was in Ryan Norman Shir, and then I went to Rosh Yeshiva Shir. I didn't go away. I used to, when the Rosh Yeshiva went to Eretz Yisrael, I went to New Haven to learn in New Haven for 3 weeks, 4 weeks, and I used to go every so often for a couple of weeks. I branched a couple of weeks, and then I ended up did branch 6 months in Miami and 6 months in New Haven. And it's such an opportunity, but we could all do it. We see, we have the high school, we have the guys branching at the high school minion, but you see, when you put yourself in that situation, I know, the guys were coming to Davin, which was last year, it was a very nice session. Thank you, everyone. But you see, when you're davening and you realize that now you're like a role model, It's a chizik for you yourself. One guy told me that when he davened here, and with the ninth grade last year, then he went back to the Beis Medrash, and next month he came back. He says he sees his davening was better. Why should that be? Of course, it's pushed it that way, because when you're a role model, you have an achrayus, so you take it more seriously. You take it more seriously. So I give the guys who came here from Queens, thank you very much. It's a tremendous, tremendous chizik for our Beis Medrash. Tremendous chizik. It's like a testimony to how well it's going, that the guys must have heard that, okay, they can be able to come. Sometimes you have to go branching, you're not going to learn a word for a month. I assume that you realize that you come here, you'll be able to learn, because the guys are learning, and you can branch and you could learn. What could be better? But for all of us, I think it's incumbent upon us to, if the Rebbeinu Shlom sent this, it's not easy to get a guy to come from, Aaron, you know how hard it is, okay? On a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being difficult, would you call this a 10? It's a miracle that you're here. I heard about you coming here at Isru Chag, okay? Pesach. it's impossible. The fact that there are four fellas here is really a tremendous opportunity for our yeshiva. So it means that, okay, everyone, I'm not sure how long they'll be here, but at least for the next month, we have a great opportunity to make this next month powerful. And who knows, with 1 month, what you can accomplish. If one share you can accomplish, one city you can accomplish. I got rid of these sheriffs in 40 minutes. They got them off my back. Or Moshe Feinstein, by the time he got back to Luben, Russia, they were already pulling down the draft notices. And Ramosha says he thinks it was from the Kabbalah. He didn't even learn yet. Just be Makabal on himself. So let's all take upon ourselves the mikabel on ourselves, all Torah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu can remove from us all the problems. Won't have any more problems with who knows what's going on. Your parents won't give you a hard time. Your roommates won't give you a time. The yeshiva will give you a lot of time. The laundry will work. You'll have panasa. Hashem should bless us all. We should really be masleach.